Each week, a well-known person is asked the question, if you were to be cast away alone on a desert island, which 8 gramophone records would you choose to have with you? As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Our castaway this week is the singer and recording artist, George Baker. George, how well could you resign yourself to a castaway's existence?
Oh, I think pretty well, Roy, because I have a philosophical turn of mind and I just knuckle down to the situation.
As consolation, is there any one thing you'd be happy to have got away from?
Yes, perhaps the noise and bustle of modern traffic.
Did you have any plan in choosing these 8 records you're taking with you?
Oh, yes, indeed. First of all, it's music I like, or the type of music I like. Secondly, some of the items form for me landmarks in my musical life. And thirdly, it embraces people whom I've known well and whose art I've admired.
What's the first one?
First one is by Harold Samuel, one of the greatest Bach players this country ever produced. You know, he knew the whole of Bach's keyboard music from memory. And then again, in Harold playing this fugue of Bach's, he reminds me of my early pianoforte days, when in the 2-part and 3-part inventions of Bach, and eventually the 48 preludes and fugues, of which this is one that I could give a reasonable performance. And then another thing is, Harold Samuel was not only a good friend of mine, but he proposed me for the Savage Club 50 years ago.
The fugue from Bach's Prelude and Fugue in C minor, played by Harold Samuel. What's your second choice?
An excerpt from The Dream of Gerontius by Elgar. Now, I've chosen this particular music because I first heard it 59 years ago in Liverpool. And the impression it made then has stayed with me all those years. The excerpt I've chosen from this work is leading up to that enormous and wonderful climax, Praise to the Holiest in the Height.
An excerpt from Elgar's The Dream of Gerontius, Gladys Ripley and Hedel Nash as soloists, Sir Malcolm Sargent conducting. You mentioned hearing that for the first time in Liverpool, George. Is that where you were born?
No, I was born in Birkenhead.
Do you come from a musical family?
Not specially musical, but my father was a very good amateur bass singer, and he was also the founder and conductor of the Birkenhead Lee and Madrigal Society.
How early in life did you start taking an interest in music?
Oh, I think about 7 years of age when I tried to play the violin, not very successfully. And my father then tried me at the flute, but that wasn't much better. Then he thought, oh, well, you'd better try the piano. I took to it like a duck to water, and from thence onwards I didn't seem to have much trouble.
Yes. When you left school, did you start studying music right away?
No, I was a clerk in one or two offices, but eventually I finished up in the office of the borough treasurer in the town hall of Birkenhead.
But your evenings were devoted to music?
Oh, yes, entirely. In fact, I was an accompanist at a very early age, because I've spoken about my father being a singer. Well, he trotted me round to play for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, after a time, I studied the organ. And in fact, I played my first church service at the age of 15. And then, at the age of 16, I became the organist and choir master of Wood Church Parish Church, which is just beyond the borders of Birkenhead. And I continued at the organ for two other churches, subsequently making a period of 7 years in all as an organist.
Yes. And after that?
I won a scholarship to the Royal College of Music, one of these open scholarships. Then I not only gave up playing the organ, but I resigned from the town hall of Birkenhead, and gladly resigned, because I didn't really like the job very much.
Your scholarship was for singing, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, entirely.
In your early days as a singer, did you find it fairly easy to get engagements when you left the college?
Well, yes, it was easy in my case. You see, I started making gramophone records at the end of 1909. Well, when they came on the market, I began to be known fairly quickly, and therefore didn't have a great deal of trouble.
Well, this was while you were still a student, wasn't it?
Indeed. Still at the college.
Yes. Well, you served in the army in the First World War. Then for a number of years you appeared in musical comedy and operetta.
Yes, I was in musical comedy and revue for 7 consecutive years.
Mm.
And enjoyed it very much indeed.
And then you switched to grand opera.
Yes, eventually I went and was a guest performer with the one-time British National Opera Company. I played only 2 parts for them. One was Papageno and the Magic Flute, and quite a number of performances of Escamillo in Carmen.
Yes. And you played with the Carl Rosa.
Yes, indeed. I played 2 parts for them. A few performances of Sharpless from Madame Butterfly, and a lot of performances as Mephistopheles in Gounod's Faust. In fact, the last operatic performance I ever gave was actually on my 60th birthday in Handley.
Mm. You've done some valuable administrative work in the musical field with the Royal Philharmonic Society.
Yes, I've been the honorary treasurer of the Royal Philharmonic Society for over 30 years.
And you were with the BBC music staff.
Yes,
for a while.
I was for a little over 3 years. I was first of all assistant overseas music director, and in 3 months' time I was the overseas music director.
Well, we've talked about some of the highlights of your career. Let's break off for your next record.
Well, the next one is by Debussy. I'd like the whole of Elias et Mélisande, but that's impossible. So, to have a memory of Debussy and a flavour, we'll have L'après-midi d'une faune, conducted by Monteur.
The opening of Debussy's Prelude à l'après-midi d'une faune, the London Symphony Orchestra conducted by Monteur. Now, George, you started recording in 1909 while you were still a student. How did this happen?
Well, I went to the Patti Frere place because I thought I would like to get some work. and made a test. Nothing happened. I never heard anything from them for about 12 months. And then I was sent for. They heard me sing again, and they gave me a contract there and then.
Now, since then, have you any idea how many records you've made?
Well, I've got a good idea. It's not less than 3,000.
Under all sorts of names?
Under all sorts of names. In the old days, you see, there were not many people who made successful records, you know, in the acoustical recording. And, therefore, the greatest use was made of the few people who did make the records. And in order to vary their catalogue, they gave us different names for different types of music.
Mm-hmm. You did a lot of musical comedy records?
Oh, a lot. A tremendous lot. Sometimes under my own name, and sometimes under Victor Conway, Leslie Milton, George Barnes, oh, heaps of names. There was one of a duettist called Howard and Harrison, another set of duettists called Cortland and Jeffries. I was Walter Jeffries. Mm-hmm. And all sorts of things went on at that time. As indeed, they did go on at that time, even in the British Broadcasting Corporation.
You also made a lot of children's records.
Oh, well, yes, the children's records. I've done the first two books of When We Were Very Young, and The Hums of Pooh, and also the Alice in Wonderland records. And they took my name, or rather the words and music, took my name all round the world.
Now, perhaps your greatest success as a recording artist has been in Gilbert and Sullivan. You've recorded the whole G&S repertoire, haven't you?
I've recorded the whole of the G&S repertoire once round on the acoustical method, once round on the electrical recording, and two-thirds round on present-day recording. In fact, the last opera we made was made only just over 2 years ago, and that was Rudigore, in which I sang the part of Robin O'Cuttle.
But you've never sung these roles on the stage with the Doyle Card Company?
Not with the Doyle Card Company, no.
When did you start broadcasting?
Oh, 1924. Down at Savoy Hill.
Yes. And once again, everything. Opera, musical comedy, oratorio.
Well, everything under the sun is most extraordinary. Scenes from Shakespeare. And one or two attempts at imitations. And I don't know what, really. I've done opera, of course. I've done musical comedy. With my wife, Olive Groves, we were two of the first in the songs of the shows. And that went on for some years, you know. It drifted along, as it were, with the tide of broadcasting.
And television, of course, when it came.
Yes, in the early days of television at Alexander Palace, I did quite a lot there, but usually not in singing, in nearly all as an actor.
Mm-hmm. Let's have record number four. What next?
Well, this is a bit of a nice one by Messager. Now, he was one of the best composers of light music, Sullivan excepted, and this is a tiny little French song taken from Véronique, and it's sung by that immaculate artist, delightful singer, Dame Maggie Tate. Ici je suis méchant ou bonne, et la couleur de mes cheveux n'est ce que sont mon nez, mes yeux n'est ce que sont mon nez, mes yeux. Et tout complet dans sa cravate, il va trancher du poids.
Maggie Tate singing a song from Véronique. Now, George, you can look back on the musical world as it was at the beginning of the century, a very different world from today's. Are there more opportunities now or not?
I should have said there were more opportunities today. You see, in the old days, there were more choral societies than there are today. Therefore, a serious singer would have more opportunities to exhibit his art than he has today in that direction. But there was no wireless, and there was no television. All they had as an adjunct to the ordinary concert world, or the opera world, or the musical comedy, was making gramophone records. And as I said previously, only very few people made them.
Very few people's voices were suited to this.
Well, they were not suitable for the way records were taken on the acoustical recording. Mm. They wanted voices that impinged on the wax or would cause the needle to cut into the wax.
Yes.
And there were not a great number of them about. Hence, as I said before, they chose so many names for these individuals.
Yes. Would you say musical standards are higher today?
Musical standards, orchestrally, are far higher. Musical standards, as far as musical appreciation is concerned, is far more widely spread than it was. The general standard of music is higher than it was. The individual standard of music is not so high as it was. In other words, there are fewer outstanding personalities. Mm-hmm. Today, the outstanding personality in the musical world is the orchestral conductor.
Yes. You're doing a lot of writing these days.
Well, I write about people because I like people. And I write regularly for two monthly magazines. And then I've done a good deal of musical journalism, and I've actually written two books on singing. Yeah. They're technical books, of course.
Let's have your next record now, number five we've got to.
Well, that's Ich grolle nicht, from the Dichterliebe, sung by Fischer Dieschau, one of the best lieder singers we've ever known.
Schumann's Ich grolle nicht, sung by Dietrich Fischer-Dieschau. What's your next record, George?
Oh, I think I'd like to hear some of the overture to Die Meistersinger, conducted by my dear friend John Barbarolli. You know, being on a desert island is all very well, but as I said earlier on, I'm a townsman, and this is a glorious piece of music about civic pride.
John Barbarolli and the Halle Orchestra, the closing passage of the overture to Die Meistersinger. George, apart from music, what are your hobbies?
Oh, what are they? Well, I'm a bit of a Shakespearean semi-scholar. Mm. It's well known that I'm a cricket fanatic.
Indeed.
And that and taking coloured photographs, I think, is about the lot.
Could you look after yourself on a desert island if you've got any hobbies that'll help you that way?
My hobbies wouldn't help me on a desert island. I'm not a handyman in any way. If I can get anyone else to do the job for me, that is to say, looking after me, I'm delighted. If I'm forced to look after myself, I've got a strong bump of self-preservation, and I've no doubt I would survive.
Yes. Do you think that bump of self-preservation could guide you to making some kind of raft or craft?
Oh, no. Oh, not at all. I'm not at all a handyman. I don't put on washers on taps or anything like that. I'm absolutely useless at it. I've been useless all my life with my hands, and I've got out of an enormous lot of work.
Splendid. Let's have another record.
Well, now, this is rather an affectionate thing that I want to put in, not only to please myself, but to please my wife. It is a song by Lisa Lehman called Oh, Tell Me Nightingale. And it is sung by Olive Groves, who is my wife, and if I may say so, I think she sings it beautifully. After all said and done, she is an artist in her own right.
Olive Grove singing Oh, Tell Me Nightingale. And now, your last record.
Well, for the last record, I'd like something from Carmen. I've mentioned that I'd played Escamillo in Carmen, and this opening song, it is the opening song from Act Two that I've chosen, is from the set of records made and conducted by the late Sir Thomas Beecham. Now, there was a man who really loved music, and his sense of panache was absolutely marvelous.
Excerpt from the second act of Carmen, conducted by Sir Thomas Beecham, with Victoria de los Angeles as one of the soloists. There are your eight records. If you could have only one of that eight, which would it be?
Well, the temptation, of course, is that I would like the record made by my wife. But, you know, on second thoughts, to be reminded of the absence of my wife would only cause me intense pain. Therefore, I think I'd better set that aside and face reality. And to do so, I would say that out of all the records I've chosen for this program, the one that would stay with me longest and remind me of my faith is The Dream of Gerontius by Elgar.
And one luxury to take with you.
Paper and pens. You know, these self-writing pens. I think I'd want paper and pen so they could scribble my thoughts, such as they may be.
And one book, apart from the Bible and Shakespeare?
Oh, that's very difficult. You see, my favourite author, the one who wears best for my taste, is Charles Dickens. And you can't have an omnibus edition of Charles Dickens. It'd be the size of a wagonette. So I would say Well, the greatest number of Dickens books you can pack into one volume.
Right. And thank you, George Baker, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Disc.
Well, thank you, Roy, for inviting me. And goodbye to you.
Goodbye, everyone.
The guest in today's recorded program was George Baker. The interviewer was Roy Plumley and the producer, Monica Chapman. On Saturday at 1:40, the castaway will be the horticulturist, Dr. W.E. Shure Cooper. And next Monday at 1:10, we have our 750th program in the series when our castaway will be Dame Margot Fontaine.